Hi, welcome back. 5 o'clock. Happy hour time. Gwen and Chris, 97.3, The Fan. Crisello?
Swinging cats might be my new favorite thing.
You know what? I just heard that again. And I missed, it's kind of crazy, but I missed the actual saying. It's swing a dead cat was the original saying.
It's okay, Chris.
It's the visual.
Supposedly you're supposed to swing a dead cat and not hit people.
I was with Tony. I had just the visual of a cat like screaming as you're swinging.
Yeah, I know, just swinging it around. Yeah. The idiot part, though, is accurate, I hate to say, in this day and age. These people out there.
How many times have you swung a cat?
I'm so entertained daily.
Not in
just the intros to our show.
never in my wife's presence would I swing a cat. Can you imagine? Would
in
you
your
do
wife's
it?
Presence.
Would you grab a
no,
cat by the tail
not.
And swing
Are you
it around?
Kidding me? That would be so mean.
No kidding, man.
Well,
not nice.
I wouldn't touch the cat because I would immediately.
You're not a cat
die.
Guy.
Are I'm you allergic? An, to
are you
oh, you're allergic.
Allergic? Oh boy.
Yeah. Like badly.
Badly.
Cats.
Gotcha.
Badly is not even a word, but you know what I'm saying?
I hear
it
you.
It was that bad that it was badly.
Yeah.
All right, Scraby, we're in the Odyssey Palace Studios. Tony's there in Peoria. We got to finish up our big five. You left us off with a question.
Yep. I'm going to set it up
better
real quick.
This question.
You better remind us what it
yes.
was.
So, Sportsbook across America have said the Four Nations games have pretty much made their year because they're being bet on 7 times more than regular hockey games. So, Tony, I was thinking, is sports betting the way for fringe sports like hockey and soccer to become more popular?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think it's pretty. The evidence is there that even if your sport is not fringe, betting can enhance your game. Now, these fringe sports would have to be careful because they may not have the ecosystem to deal with the repercussions that come with your sport gaining more popularity due to betting.
Yeah.
Meaning, they may not have the security that, you know, MLB, NFL, NBA have to protect their player. What fringe sports are we talking about, by the way?
We're talking about hockey. We're talking about soccer. I guess some of the, you know, WNBA, some of those sports that are right there that we
but
know about.
But they're doing it.
But like,
yeah, I'm about to say they're all
using it. What
I'm
saying is no one bets on hockey, but now all of a sudden they love hockey. And they're betting on hockey.
Well, but
for
they're
this
betting on
thing.
They're betting on the event. They're not betting on hockey. This event has become for some reason bigger than hockey. It's become a whole, you know, us versus them, and you know, for those north of the border who now are not fans of us, it's taken on a whole new meaning. I don't know that you know the USA Canada hockey rivalry. To me, has never been an actual hate-filled rivalry in the past. It's always been a respect-filled rivalry.
Yeah,
now there's a little dislike that has been injected into it for a variety
it is
of
all
different
fake
reasons.
Too, by the way, because
yes, right,
because these dudes are all teammates at
yeah,
some point during the year. It's not like they stay separated when they go back to the NHL.
I'm a little surprised that the sports public has bought into it as much as it has.
I am too.
The
Remember,
reason
Chris,
I
we brought
that
up last week, I got crushed for not knowing about.
Well,
it.
they're comparing it to the 1980 Olympic, you know, Winter Olympic
Russian?
Team, and that yeah, we beat the Russians during the Cold War. And they had professionals and we had college kids. This is not that. This is
right.
not even close
right.
to that.
I think the stakes are a little bit higher.
It's a little different, that. Yeah. So it's interesting, but you know, good on the NHL and hockey for being able to sell it.
Yeah,
but I think
sure.
that's why you're getting the betting. Because, Scraby, you can go WNBA. You can bet anything you want.
I know, but
you can bet it. You can bet.
I feel like this. If I'm at the NHL, I'm working with these betting companies to come up with more stuff for people to bet on.
You're going to have to find more games like this because you can already bet on everything in an NHL game. You can bet who scores the first goal. If Crosby
and
scores,
you know what? You asked yesterday about like other sports using this kind of framework to enhance. I don't know that this even works for hockey beyond this year.
I mean,
right?
You could be
I think
right.
certain things have happened that have kind of thrown a little bit of kerosene on this a little bit. But outside of that, I don't know that had those things not happened, we'd be having the same conversation.
You might be right.
On a political, I'm talking about on the political side. There's been some things that have kind of gone back and forth, and I think that's contributed to kind of the spiciness that. Because I can't think of any other reason why these two would be so. I mean, the puck drop and we get three fights in the first 9 seconds. Like, what happened?
You know what? For the second time in the Big Five, guys, you have changed my mind about something.
Wow.
This is an eye-opening day for me.
Yeah, you're a stubborn dude, so I don't know how this is happening.
I know. I was going to take this one to the grave, but I'm going to give it up, as well as the Four Nations baseball tournament. Not going to go after that anymore. The NFL league salary cap for 2025 jumped to $281.5 million yesterday, a $26 million increase from 2024. The year before, it jumped from $224 to $255. The largest rise in its history. 10 years ago, the salary cap was less than, or right around $140 million. So that's a 200% increase in one decade. It could now be the norm to see $60 million per year quarterbacks and $40 million per year wide receivers. Chris, is this sustainable?
I was returning an email. I know he's going to get so mad.
I mean, we're doing a show. We're doing a show.
It's a time-sensitive issue. Sorry.
We're doing a show.
Read this. You want me to go first then?
Yeah, you go first. Look at that look on his face. If you're on YouTube, you can't miss it.
I love that you were honest with me. You know, I was
feeling that question, too. I was on top of that.
That's hilarious.
Basically, Chris, in one decade, the salary cap in football has gone up 200%.
Okay.
I heard that through my email typing.
No, I'm glad you brought that up because it was a story we wanted to talk about yesterday and we didn't.
Yes. Is this sustainable?
I think it is, yeah. Apparently so.
You think in 10 more years we're going to see a $561 million salary cap?
The NFL can do whatever the hell they want. They can charge whatever the hell they want and we'll pay it. The TV networks will pay it. The streamers will pay it. Everybody's lined up to buy NFL. So,
They got their hooks in us.
Yeah, when I first saw this story on the headline, I thought, oh, the salary cap went up to $22 million. No. The salary cap went up $22 million. More. Like it's in the 200 millions. So, yeah, it'll be in the 300, the 400. I think it'll go up.
I was confused there for a second. I was reading an email over here.
Good.
Tony.
You should if you have to. You got to do what you got to do.
Is this sustainable?
Yeah. This aligns with all of the TV money they're bringing in, and that's just going up. Everything they do, we eat up. We consume. I mean, they can literally send the two worst teams to a different country, play a football game that's at 4 a.m, and we will get up and watch it, even though we don't care about either of the two teams that are there, right? So
It's usually Jacksonville.
Yeah, but Gabe Davis is on my fantasy team.
Darn right he is.
Again, I think that... As diabolical as they seem at time, they are the creme de la creme when it comes to business. And they continue to just do crazy numbers. And we keep participating. So, yeah, I think it's sustainable.
Well, let's be honest about this, Scraby. It went up $22 million. You didn't even hear a peep from owners saying, oh, boy, that's too much. Owners just said, okay.
Not a word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There wasn't
a word
about it.
That is very strange.
Let's take it up $22 million per team. Perfect.
That tells you how much they're making. That's a great point because typically when one of the sides is balking at something, there's something wrong. We've heard the NFL. Matter of fact, all the NFL owners are telling us is we want more. We want more games.
Yeah, that's
we
true.
Want more trap. Like, so there's nothing that says that's. There's no indicator saying that this is not sustainable.
All right. I will move on from that one.
Did you change your mind on that as well?
No, I knew this was going to happen. Is it sustainable? I think I've said it a million times. The NFL could eat itself one day. And then they have nothing.
That's the only chance it has.
He keeps trying that one, but it's not going to happen.
But I was also reading that Ja'Marr Chase, because of this increase, is likely to probably stay with the Bengals now because they're able to offer
him a bigger deal. Not
going to
stay with the Bengals beyond
T. Higgins?
After this year? T. Higgins.
Yeah.
They're about to franchise him, and he is going to lose his mind.
Yeah, because, I mean, T. Higgins, this is an interesting situation, but it just is terrible for him that he's got the best wide receiver in the league on the other side in Ja'Marr Chase, so.
No, you know what's terrible for him is that they had however many people not show up to the vote when they could have maybe gotten rid of the franchise tag. Instead, they all signed up for another year of it, so, hey, this is part of what happens when you don't all collective bargain together.
That's true. I would love to see if T. Higgins was a voter.
Number one.
I don't know if you can, but
that would be great.
Yeah, no, I don't think you can. I don't think the players union is going to allow us to know those types of things.
Aaron Boone got a 2-year contract extension, much to the dismay of some Yankees fans out there. He's been there for 7 seasons. He's made the playoffs 6 times. His playoff record is 1 game below 500. Tony, when are Yankees fans going to like him?
Who cares? I love the fact that, you know, Yankee fans are probably some of the most boisterous fan base outside of maybe Philly that there is. And I love the fact that their ownership was like, we don't care what you guys think. We're signing this guy to another 2 years. And, you know, the numbers really back it up. I get that there was one point in the Yankee organization where they literally, every year, they felt like they should win a World Series. That has not been the case, at the very least, since 2000, right? You can make an argument that everything had to line up perfectly for them, to win when they did that. They did it. But it hasn't been. They got to lower the expectations of World Series or bust every year. That is not where the Yankees are at. I can name a few other teams right now that are in front of them in terms of that. So I think this is a good signing. Boone has been terrific for them. He's gotten them to a World Series. They haven't quite been able to knock that door down, but there's a lot of teams with a lot of talent and great managers that haven't been able to knock that door down. Doesn't mean they should be fired. Who are you bringing in, by the way, if you do fire?
That's the first question I always ask.
Everybody is not. Here's the other thing. New York is a unique spot because you have to be built to deal with what comes to that. And he's 1,000% built for it. Not everybody is. And that's in that particular job, that's part of what you're hiring, is someone that can deal with the edginess of the fan base and the media there. So, yeah, I think this is a fantastic move. I'm glad that ownership decided not to listen to their fan base on this one.
Chris, when are they going to like him?
When he wins the World Series.
That's
it. And the other thing with the Yankee fans, they like to tell us that they're the smartest fans in baseball. They're not, because they don't appreciate a guy that is winning 195 games every single year for them. So they're not sounding very smart. And my favorite thing about Aaron Boone, 39 ejections in the last 6 years. Attaboy, Aaron. Man. Keep at it, babe.
He's pressing Bobby with those type of numbers.
39.
Right there.
That's a lot in this day and age. I mean, because you know, you don't have to argue as much as you used to.
There's not much to argue in these days.
All right. That's it for the Big Five, guys. Nice job.
Traffic.
Okay.
Thank you, Scraby. 5:21 on the clock. Who's letting me know we're going NBA? I think we kind of clarified that before we went to break, but being the great producer he is, he just wanted to remind me.
He always double checks things. NBA. Yep, he does that.
Yeah, he does. This is why we love Scrape so much.
Do I have like tire marks on my back from when Tony ran me over just now?
I'm sorry, I ran you over because you actually kind of scared me. I wasn't expecting you to hop in the mic there and be like, "Hey, we're going to basketball." A couple things on basketball. We talked a little bit about it earlier. One of the supposed faces of the league, Wembanyama, is out for the season. Had a blood clot in the shoulder. They are shutting him down. Unfortunate for Wimby, because, you know, he was having a good season. But, you know, this is kind of where we are in sports today. I mean, if there's – and listen, blood clots aren't really something you play with.
I wouldn't think so. Yeah.
Yeah, even if it's in the shoulder. So they're going to sit him down. There was an interesting conversation, Chris, about faces of the league over the All-Star break. And so many people, you know, talking about this guy's going to be the face. You know, Wimby's the name mentioned. Anthony Edwards is the name mentioned. And leave it to Sir Charles mm-hmm. Barkley to kind of put it the way that it should be.
Colby White.
Faces Colby White. I didn't know if I heard his name mentioned this last weekend, we could throw it in there. Faces of the league traditionally have never been something that have been given out or given to somebody.
You just get it.
Those players have been, don't you? Of course.
They've all won,
but more importantly, they've all went and it wasn't a conversation of giving it to them. They kind of just went and took it. They just became the face of the league, whether it was Michael, whether it was Kobe at one point, and whether it was LeBron, all of those guys, there might have been a conversation of when they were going to be the faces, but it was never just handed off to them. They all went and kind of seized it on their own to where you just had to kind of say, oh, okay, he's the face of the league.
Yeah, and you mentioned 15 NBA championships with those three guys. So I think that's imperative. I mean, Doncic, I think, is a potential guy. But, you know, he hasn't won it all yet. Now with the Lakers, I think, you know, he's got a big chance to be that as well. Which brings up the question that was posed last night, or maybe this morning. They were talking about whether or not the Lakers, Tony, are going to be able to extend Luka Doncic. And they have a deadline apparently of August the 2nd. So it's a ways off. It's after this season. The Lakers will have time to retool the team a little around him. There's a lot of people that are feeling right now, and I don't know that they have any proof of this, but they're feeling that Luka Doncic is not really thrilled that this caught him out of left field. He didn't expect to be traded. He didn't really want to go to the Lakers necessarily. And the fact that this move cost him $100 million, because that's what he could have got with the max thing in Dallas. Do you put any credence into any of this? Or, you know, are people overreacting, trying to make a story that's not there yet?
I think people are overreacting. I don't know if they're overreacting. I think they're trying to make a story that's not there.
Right.
Luka has played 3 games with the Lakers. 3. Also, he's played 3 games since Christmas. You know, the first 3 games back after he got hurt were all with the Lakers. So, listen, we've seen teams formed in the offseason, new pieces, and it takes some time for it to get acclimated. Now, here's what I'll say in terms of the I think, legitimate conversation of can the Lakers extend him. Yes, he lost, I think it was like $112, $117 million in that trade.
Yeah.
But even with that being said, the Lakers, being that he is the team that he is with right now, can still offer him one more year than anybody else can when he does hit free agent. So he lost 100 and whatever million in the trade. He'll lose more if he signs elsewhere because they can offer one less year what the Lakers can. And so that gives the Lakers an advantage. Doesn't mean that he'll want to sign there, but I think for those who are you know, making that assumption, I think that's just, you know,
hating
on the rich. At this
little
point.
Early. Yeah. All right, here's the stat of the day that I promised everybody at 2 o'clock, and I'm sure many of you hung around for 3.5 hours to hear it. But LeBron James missed the game-winning chance last night to tie it with a three-pointer, and I believe he missed 2. Somebody somewhere pointed out that since he joined the Lakers, LeBron James has tried 29 shots in the last 5 seconds or in overtime to tie or win games. And he's only made 1 of them. And he's missed the last 21 in a row. Scraby says at least he's willing to take the shot.
Yeah.
My question is it time for somebody else to take the shot? Because that's a little crazy. Look, Michael missed a million of them. Kobe missed a million of them. We never hear about that. But it seems like
here's the thing. this is how we work, right? I remember when Kobe was at the back end, half of his career, and he was missing some of those shots that he's made, and everybody was pointing out, well, actually, Kobe's not that clutch. He's such. Like, this is what we do. This is what we do when we like to see guys climb, but we also like to see them fail from time to time.
We like to build them up just to tear them down.
To chop them down. Yeah, exactly. But no, this isn't anything new. Michael, in his career, missed a boatload of shots, as you said.
I'm sure he missed more than anybody else because he took all of them.
Michael coined that saying. You never, you miss 100% of the shots that you don't take, basically.
Or no, that was Wayne Gretzky.
Was it Wayne?
That wasn't Wayne Gretzky line.
I knew it was one of them greats that had to say it.
Definitely was.
But nonetheless, I mean, I think Sraby's right. There are guys that we know, they get in that moment, they're passing that ball off. And by the way, how much has LeBron been criticized for not taking the shot?
Every time he passes, they say he's the worst player on history. So.
Oh, he's not key. He doesn't have that fire.
He's scared to death. Yeah, he doesn't want it. No, good point, Tony. Interesting.
Let's get to the break. When we come back, if you missed it, Jerry Palm, CBS Sports, blessed us with his bracketology. You'll get a chance to hear it next. More Gwen and Chris.
It's 5:35. You've waited long enough. Time to announce today's biggest fan, Nick Walker. Nick Walker of El Cajon. Nick, you're the winner today. You've got 10 minutes to call us back. Phone number is 833-288-0973. Nick Walker of El Cajon. If you do call us, you'll qualify for the grand prize. 20 tickets for you and your friends for a night out in our Odyssey suite at a Padres game later this season. Remember, if you out there haven't registered yet, do it. Do it soon. So you have a chance to get this great prize, 973thefansd.com/biggestfan, to register. Nathan McKinnon. Anybody know who that is?
He's a hockey player.
He's a great hockey player. He plays for the Avalanche. He also plays for Team Canada, and he's scored here in the opening 5 minutes of the championship match to give Canada a 1-0 lead over the United States. Crisello, Tony Gwynn Jr., and Matt Scraby. I am surprised a little bit.
Did you do that on your own, Chris?
Do what?
Fix the camera.
I did. All by myself.
It's great. We weren't even paying attention. He had no idea your camera
was on. Oh, I knew.
All right, so look at this, Tony. T-shirt. For those of you
cars,
on YouTube,
the car candy.
Hold on. Let me put you up. There we go.
The Cars Candy O. Now, that it's a little bit of a risque.
Man, that is racy. Ooh. For Chris Ello. I didn't even notice that.
You didn't notice it. I've been wearing it all day, Scrape. It's funny that you didn't notice it.
I did.
The Cars is my favorite music group from back in the day. And this was the album cover from their second album. And it was called Candy O. So I ordered this T-shirt a couple of weeks ago because I wanted to get something to represent my favorite group from the back in the day. I don't know if anybody out there remembers the Cars, but I imagine some do. They were quite popular.
I think many people remember the Cars.
Okay. But anyway, the shirt came in, I think, last night. My wife said, oh, you got your shirt. Let's unwrap it. So I opened it up and showed it to her.
Oh.
She didn't celebrate. And I think it was because of the risque drawing.
Let me put you back
that
up.
That was on the album
solo
cover.
And you got a woman on a couch who's laying down
she's
and
on
like
a car hood.
Oh, she's on a car hood. That makes sense.
Wait, who didn't celebrate?
Loriello.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, no, I can definitely see her not celebrating that.
She did not celebrate, but I went with the old.
Wait, you thought it's about?
I went with the old. That was the album cover. You know, this isn't. You know.
Did you think she was going to celebrate?
Not once I saw it, no. Not in my possession. Not in my possession, I thought. And I don't think she's too... Now that she's going to know that I wore it on, you know, the show today, she's going to be like, what are you doing? Don't wear that.
You know, now that I see it, I don't know.
You're finding it to be a little
we
much
might have to
for
blur
our younger
out the
audience.
Entire
you're
going
to
blur you. It's that risque.
Scraby, can you put a little blur feature over my
yeah, it's just gonna be
there?
It's just gonna be the swearing emoji over Chris's shirt all show long.
Sorry about that, everybody. I hope I didn't offend anybody, but that was the actual album cover back in the day. All right, so that's where that came from.
Love it.
I'm a little concerned. I'm sitting next to Chris in his risque shirt. I might get fired.
I'm covering it up. Covering it up for the final couple minutes of the show.
Thank you, Chris.
Sorry, everybody. Let's check some traffic, and then we'll hear from the bracketologist, Jerry Palm, the very latest for you Aztec basketball fans. You want to hear it.
Looking at your bracketology, you got our Aztecs as a 10 seed, and UCSD, a team that has come on pretty strong here here in San Diego. Also in your bracketologist in your bracket right now as a 12 seed. Just what have you seen from those two teams?
Well, UC San Diego has a nice non-conference win over Utah State. They're doing very well in their league. They're in the bracket. They're the leader of the league. They're probably going to have to win the league in order to get in because of the loss to Seattle, which is a quad four loss, and the loss at Riverside. The win over Utah State's not enough to make up for that. And they've got a very quad four heavy schedule. 13 of their games of their 24 games are quad four games. So it's not a strong enough schedule, not enough higher quality wins on the schedule to be in contention for an at-large spot. But they've done very well in their league, have a chance to win the league, maybe even favored to win the conference. So the automatic bid is the path for UC San Diego. And then for the Aztecs, you know, they've had a pretty good year again. You know, it's they've got to win it, you know, against Houston, which is huge because that's a potential one seed and probably no worse than a two. The win over Creighton is a team in the same neighborhood of the bracket as them, maybe a little higher. Sweep of Boise State looks a little better today than it did before yesterday's game. So really the only negative is the home loss to UNLV. That's a quad three loss. And they've got three of their next four on the road, including the return trip to UNLV and the two teams at the top of the league in Utah State and New Mexico. So a challenge is ahead for them that they need to be up for. And if they can navigate the rest of that non-conference schedule, conference schedule okay, then they'll probably be feeling pretty good about themselves entering the Mountain West tournament.
Jerry Palm does the bracketology, CBS Sports. There are some other brackets out there that other people may seem like they think more of. They shouldn't. Jerry Palm's, it was shown last year, was on top of the bracket with a far better prediction rate than some of the other ones that, you know, people think are more familiar. So I invite you, Aztec fans especially, get over and check out Jerry's bracket because he's on top of this. And I like that you have the Aztecs 10 right now, Jerry, which gives them just a little bit of buffer rather than a last four in.
Not quite there.
Yeah, right. They do play at Utah State this week. So and that's a tough one. If they don't win that one, would they still probably get an at-large if they were able to win out the rest of the way? And that's no easy task, as you pointed out. They're going to get New Mexico at home, at Wyoming, which is altitude, at UNLV, who they lost to, and then home to Nevada. Would that be enough, though, if they go 4-1 there to probably be safe?
I think they'll feel pretty good about themselves.
Okay.
I think they're in a good spot if they're 4-1 entering the conference tournament. You know, there's a lot going on. I mean, I consider them a bubble team, so whenever they play, I'm writing about them. But the bubble is, you know, sizable still. Teams that can go either way around the cut line. And there's like five SEC teams, you know, in that neighborhood as well. I've got two in the first or the last four in and another one in the first four out and two others just above the first four in that are playing their way down. And those five teams have got some seriously backloaded schedules. And, you know, I've got 13 SEC teams in the bracket. I think that number is going to be closer to 11. So the good news there is that it's a bit more of a cushion for San Diego State. You know, they might have a couple fewer of those teams to compete with than they do right now. But they have to do their own part. I mean, they can't worry about other teams. They have to go out and do their own thing.
Jerry Palm, CBSSports.com, joins us here. And Jerry, one of the teams you talk about in your article was Ohio State. They seem to have a similar path in terms of the Aztecs on the bubble key stretch down, coming down, you know, the home stretch here. Is there some similarities there between those two teams?
Yeah, I mean, Ohio State, well, they're 15-11, so, you know, there's only been one team get an at-large bid in the 30 years that I've been doing this that was, you know, fewer than four games above 500. So Ohio State's right there right now.
Yeah.
Their schedule is a little more generous. They have three of their last five on the road. They have the L.A. trip to UCLA and USC, but they get Northwestern at home. They get Nebraska at home. They go to Indiana. You never know what you're going to get from them. So, you know, they've got a schedule that gives them an opportunity to build a little bit of a cushion here. That Northwestern game tonight at home is very important because you've got to take care of business at home and then see what you can do on the road. But if they can go, you know, 3-2 down the stretch here, then they at least know that they can do something in the conference tournament and be okay. And, you know, see what happens there. And you've won a road game if you do that. So, Ohio State certainly a team that is not in the house yet, and it's got some work to do, but it's got a schedule where they might be able to navigate it.
Jerry, how has the dynamic changed for you trying to pick the bracketology now that there's 16 teams in the SEC, 300 teams in the Big Ten, you know, 25 teams in the Big 12. Right, I know. But how do you categorize?
Looking forward to San Diego State being in the Big Ten here pretty soon.
I will take it at this point.
San Diego as well.
Yeah, we're kind of on the outside. But how does that change the way you do it? Because, I mean, you were saying 12, 13 teams in the SEC, I mean, are going to get in. But it's got to be difficult to quantify. It's got to be difficult to quantify when a team is, you know, well under 500 in its own conference, you know, trying to compare that to other teams.
Yeah, so fortunately, conference record is not criteria. They don't even look at it. It's not on the team sheet. They don't care how you did in your league.
Okay.
So non-conference games, conference games all count the same. The only conference thing that matters is you win the league, you're automatically in. They don't have to pick you as an at-large. That's all the conference stuff matters. Everything else, they're just other games.
I didn't know that.
So,
interesting.
Yeah, it's always been that way, actually. I shouldn't say always. It's at least 20 years it's been that way.
Okay.
So the conference records are just, they just don't care. So in terms of trying to determine, you know, like the quality of a team's resume, you know, that you've got more, you know, teams from the same conference maybe on your team sheet maybe, but I don't think of them as conference teams. I just think of them as, you know, this is a really good team, like a quad one team or a quad two team. You know, I look at the quality of the wins and the losses, and I don't have to think about whether or not they're conference games. It doesn't matter. So one thing it does, though, is that you might have more common opponents when you're comparing teams because your conference is bigger now. But that's really neither here nor there. But, you know, in terms of the problem when it comes to all these teams in the same conference is bracketing, because there's a lot of bracketing rules regarding keeping teams from the same conference separated as best you can. And you're trying to avoid rematches from regular season games. Well, you know, you could have, you know, just like 10 other teams from your conference that you have to avoid, as not to mention anybody you happen to play in non-conference, you know, that you have to. So bracketing is kind of a nightmare because of all these teams in the same conference and the bracketing rules regarding, you know, teams in the same conference. But otherwise, you know, just in terms of choosing the teams, the selection and the seeding, I don't really think it changes much.
Jerry Palm joins us, CBS Sports. And Jerry, you know, it seems like every year you get a different back. Last two seasons, UConn was the clear-cut favorite going into March, and they proved that. In years past, it's been a little bit more parity. How do you see this year's top, you know, 35 teams? Is there some separation between the top and the middle and the bottom? Like, where does this kind of play out in your mind?
Yeah, I think, Auburn looks like the clear favorite. If you're going to pick a team that's the clear favorite this year, it's Auburn. But I don't know that they're invincible. You know, they've been beaten during the season already a couple times. Duke beat them once. They might be a number one seed as well. You know, Alabama's going to get another shot at them. You know, this is a team before Florida beat them on the road. You know, Florida beat them at their place. That's the best win anybody can get. So they're not invincible, but they certainly look like a clear favorite in the same way that UConn has been maybe the last couple of years. You know, last year, of course, Purdue was really good as well. But, you know, even when they got to that final game, UConn was still like a touchdown favorite. So I think it's Auburn. But then the top of the SEC, the committee gave us a bracket last weekend with five of the top six teams from the SEC.
Yeah.
So, I think it's going to be interesting for me to see how well this league actually does when they get into, you know, NCAA tournament environment. I think the very best teams, you know, Auburn, Alabama, you know, Florida, you know, A&M, Tennessee, I think those teams have a chance to do pretty well. I think, you know, after that, anything could happen. For example, Missouri, who was 0-18 in the league last year, just beat Alabama last night. And, you know, they've had a great season. And was it Alabama they beat? No, it wasn't Alabama. But they beat somebody last night. Anyways, you know, they're having a really good year and have won on the road. Like, they won at Florida. So, you know, this is a team that is kind of flying under the radar that has shown, you know, that they can step up and win some big games. So the SEC, I think, is going to be interesting to see, you know, what the very top teams do because they're expected to do well, but then maybe what some of these middle teams do. Can they get to the second weekend? Can they get to an Elite Eight? I'm really curious to see what those teams will do. And they did beat Alabama last night.
Yes, they did, Jerry. You got so many games going on in your mind. I understand it. I have one last thing. We got like 2 minutes left. I'm reading an article which was written about a year ago by the Associated Press. It talked about bracketologists using AI, artificial intelligence, I'm not exactly sure how they would use it, but as part of the bracketology process. Is this actually happening, or I mean, are we getting to that level of diving into all of this March Madness stuff?
I can't speak for anyone else. I don't use it.
Good.
I don't use it for anything.
Thank you. At least
I'm a computer science guy, so it's not like I'm afraid of technology. My degree is computer science.
Okay.
Right. So, but I'm not really comfortable with using it. I haven't come across a time where I thought I had to use it. And it's funny because my wife is also computer science and she uses it for everything. So, I'm never going to give my brain over to something else to do brackets. So
I'm glad. I hope something stays safe from AI, Jerry, and that your bracket is safe from AI. I'm good with that.
So, but my whole life right now, I'll be curmudgeonly and just stay away from it until, you know, I get talked into something.
Like a lot. I think you're not alone on that one, Jerry. We appreciate you coming on, spending some time with us. Thanks.
Thanks, Jerry. Jerry Palm dropping knowledge on the bracketology. And I think he's got it with the Aztecs. I hope he's wrong about UCSD. Because he said, you know, the Tritons are going to have to win the conference tournament. They're not going to get an at-large. And he laid out a bunch of reasons why not. And it's unfortunately does make some sense. They've played so many quad four games, you know, building up their record. But here's the thing that UCSD can say. They beat Utah State at Utah State. The Aztecs lost to Utah State at home and play them at Utah State this weekend. I mean, UCSD, that's a great win. But as Jerry Palm said, it might not be enough to overtake all of those, you know, lower-rated games. So, look, Tritons, you know, do the thing. Just win your conference and don't worry about it. Yeah. As far as the Aztecs are concerned, I think he hit it. You know, they've got Utah State this week. be great to win this one, but even if they don't, I think the Aztecs will still get themselves an at-large, but then they'd be at a point where they'd probably have to win the last four. And that's not going to be easy. The Aztecs have a tough schedule. They still got to go to Wyoming. They got to go to UNLV, who they lost to earlier. So, a lot of work still ahead.
Sorry, I didn't see.
I was just talking to you, Chris.
Oh, I thought he was gone.
I'm like,
no,
what?
I did too, because you weren't there, so I didn't put you up because you weren't sitting in front of the computer. I'm sorry.
Scraby.
That was me trying to protect you from, like, walking around your house saying swear words or something.
Scraby finishing the show with a mistake.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize
Scraby
that he was
Chronicles
there.
Up next.
Baseball game tomorrow. We'll be on after.